It's time for the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
We were speculating on what we would get in regards to the Texans' plan of attack. Would Nick Caserio add a little spice to the draft for us in regards to, will the Texans draft a player that will go score touchdowns, a guy at a premium position? What will he do? Will the pick get people excited? If you love a nickname like Big Red, or you like the thought of an interior lineman who wants to put people in the dirt, then the pick was for you. Kalen Rutledge is a Texan. They trade up, and you think, what's this for? The Texans made a trade up, and there was speculation that they would do that because we heard from Tom Pelissero and our own preeminent draft expert, Lance Zierlein, that the Texans in the weeks leading up to the draft were looking to trade down. But it had changed recently, and they were attempting to move up, and they did, but for an interior offensive lineman who we're not actually sure, if you go by Nick Caserio's comments after the pick, where he's going to play. Rutledge did do some center work at the Senior Bowl, but known to be a guard. The Texans have heavily invested in that spot. It's almost like what you would see on the college football level, when you have a bad room and then you just hit the transfer portal and you just overload the room of guys and you let it all shake out. And the Texans did that with the offensive line. They brought back one of their own in Ed Ingram to a nice deal for Ed Ingram. They have given money to Wyatt Teller, outside free agent. Braden Smith, another outside free agent. He does have some guard tackle versatility. And of course, they did make the draft pick of Veron Terrestre last year. And then they throw in Evan Brown, who they signed, who could be a swing interior player. And now they make this pick, a guy who fits that mold as well, except it's a first-round pick. Where is he going to play? That's the question for me, because if it's not center, is Rutledge a guy who will be set up to fight for a spot? But what's the realistic chances of him beating out some combo of Ingram, Smith, and Teller for one of those spots if he's not going to play center? It looks like his path to play early is center, where Jake Andrews resides, and he feels like, it, up until last night possibly, the one spot where they hadn't addressed it with a real outside free agent, unless you believe Evan Brown can go win that spot. So that's the pick. They have told us through their actions and their words that offensive line was the target on how they thought they could improve this football team best. They made the trade for David Montgomery. They've added all those linemen that I mentioned. They want to be a team who runs the football. And every team wants to be a team who runs the football. No team goes into it, at least in the NFL, goes into a season going, you know what? We want to pass the ball 50 times a game. It's not a viable way to go win big games. So they set out to do it, and at least their actions suggest that they certainly have followed through with that plan. Now, do they get it right? That'll be for the upcoming months, and then we'll see it in the season. So one of the, as it's been put, one of the nastiest office linemen, if not the nastiest office lineman in the draft, is a Houston Texan. I've seen some people rejoice because it is a far cry from what the Texans' offensive line was perceived to be in years prior. the Laremy Tunsil, Shaq Mason, Tyus Howard offensive line, which was more, at least some people's eyes flash, than substance. We know the jokes about the Prada bags and the designer clothes that they would show up to on game day, the photos they would take on Instagram. It struck people in the wrong way because a lot of people grew up with corn-fed, all we do is care about ball type of ideals about the offensive line. Mm. And the thought, you know, there's a noise there that you're picking up what I'm putting down.
Maybe a big red type.
I did see, do I want to address this on the show? Yeah, why not? I've seen a lot of, every time the Texans have signed an offensive lineman of a certain complexion this offseason, I have seen people go, yes, because their ideal offensive lineman is a guy who doesn't care about anything but like fishing, hunting, and playing football. Even if, I don't know what Wyatt Taylor's interests are. I think he might fit into that category. I don't know anything about him really. Braden Smith, all the guys, every time I see, there's a certain segment of the Texans fan base who goes, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If I want a good offensive lineman, my ideal offensive lineman is a guy who hunts and fishes and balls.
And it's not always the segment of Texans fans you would expect to want those guys. Those guys want them too.
Yeah.
But there is a thing of like, no, we want those type of guys.
Yeah. I would chalk it up to you apparently had the other types of guys in your offensive line stunk.
Opposite of your ex.
Yeah. Much like when you make a hire or fire in sports, you go get the opposite of what you had. And I think the Texans are seeing it this way as far as some of the outside stuff being put on these guys, but they have decided that what they had before was in direct conflict from what they want to be. Laremy Tunsil was one of the first moves made to correct it, and they're continuing that trend. And they want to be whatever version of swarm you can be on offense, particularly the offensive line. That's what they want to be, and Rutledge fits the profile. Let's hear from Nick Caserio here. He was asked about several things, and he was very complimentary of their new lineman out of Georgia Tech. Didn't fail to mention that. He played for Georgia Tech. Where's he going to play? Nick Caserio, well, evasive as always on that. Here's Nick Caserio on Rutledge and a possible position.
I mean, the things that stand out about him, I mean, toughness, violence, physicality, his playing style, his intelligence. I mean, basically, the guy wants to step on your throat in every play, so which I would say is sort of embodies what our football team is about, the way we play, intense, violent, physical. Like, we're going to run the football this year. It was an area that we felt like we wanted to and needed to improve here in the offseason. Hopefully, we've done that. I'd say Big Red is hopefully, a part of that. Like, where is he going to play? Like, who the hell knows? I mean, we'll figure out, who the best five guys are. And, put the group out there that we think is going to help us the most, understanding that we'll probably need 8 to 10 guys on the offensive line here at some point. So, he's a player that, again, a good example, transfer up. So started at obviously a lower level, then transferred over to Georgia Tech and had a good career there. Was at the Senior Bowl. We spent a little bit of time with him here in the spring. I mean, Cole went down there and worked him out. He's a player like I think the whole building collectively felt strongly about. So, it sort of worked out the way that we had hoped it would. So, excited to get him here. And
another version of, or a longer version of saying they got their guy. They got the guy who fits what they want to be. And we'll see how it goes the rest of the draft. Will they add a tight end? Lance Zierlein certainly thinks they will. He thinks it'll be another blocking tight end, which is what we believe they have in Cade Stover. Cade Stover has had some issues staying healthy, so and Brevin Jordan's another guy who can't stay healthy. So there's room for another tight end. Dalton Schultz maybe at the end of his Texans tenure after this year, so it wouldn't be that exciting to add a blocking tight end to the mix on day two, but it would be in line with who they say they want to be. Run the ball, be nasty, and allow your quarterback to have an easier path to being successful as they try to build a complete football team. So there it is. We'll hear from Kalen Rolich. He was interviewed by, I think it might have been just an open Zoom call for the media. So they asked him several questions. We'll hear from him when we come back on who he is and what he expects to be as a Texan. That's your pick, the interior offensive lineman. I say that because there is a possibility that he plays center as well, and that'll shake out over the next several months. I would hope if you're going to draft him that he gets to play early, and I only see the path for that to happen at center, where Jake Andrews seems like the final guy to kind of turn into a depth piece as opposed to a starter if we're going to ascend to what I would imagine they believe can be a good offensive line. We were hoping for like league average, but with all the moves they're making, I think the plan is to be better than that. The question is, if all the guys you've acquired through free agency and now the draft, have you signed someone who is a top 10 player at their position? I won't give Rutledge that because we don't know. But is there a player on that line who's a top 10 player at their spot? I don't think so. So it'll have to be about the whole. And Popovich, you heard him mention Cole Nicosero, the offensive line coach, building a cohesive unit that reaches that level. Because as it stands now, you got some guys who are okay and better than okay. And Ed Ingram played better than the perception of him going into last year, but is he a top 10 guard? Maybe.
Yeah,
if you go off of last year.
If you delineate it to like right guard and left guard.
You want a top 10 at his specific position?
Yeah, he probably gets there.
Okay.
But
he's the one guy.
Yeah, but he's also like 9. You know,
he's not top 5. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, no. Could like maybe Ursary, like you squint and Ursary get there? Probably not.
Not, I wouldn't say next year, this upcoming season. So that's the thing. They have certainly.
Well, it's also all the guys they have are like, you know, I have Keelan Rutledge's Lance draft write up on it. It's all like big, burly, strong, you know, sustains blocks for as long as possible, gets his lick in at the end of the rep. Like, it's all these type of guys. It's all like,
this is who they want to be.
Yeah. So it's like, if they're just leaning into like an identity for it, but it's interesting that like all the like weaknesses of these guys, all the kind of like cons is like, pass pro is a little sketch. And so it feels like their line got better to run the football.
Yes.
I don't know if they improved like pass protection very much.
And they may have decided they're going down one lane and it'll be less about emphasizing the quarterback and more about making sure you can run the football and be a tough team that even when your quarterback is having a tough time, you can churn out yards and be productive because you have an offensive line who
third
can just
and short.
Bully people, stuff like that. Yeah, so they have said it. Their plan of attack is proving their words to be true.
Yeah.
They're going to run the football. At least that they'll attempt to run the football. We'll see if they're any good at it with all the acquisitions. Pena, you want to change the topic and talk Rockets? We can do that. We'll hear from Rutledge when we come back, and then we can certainly talk to Pena as well. Rockets, Lakers tonight. The news is, at least from yesterday, Austin Reeves now upgraded to questionable. KD, questionable with an ankle and the knee. Okay. I mean, I would imagine he plays. It would be a real thing for everyone involved if he can't go tonight. You might as well. You know what? I said it yesterday that I wouldn't be overreactionary. If he doesn't play in game 3, rip up the blueprint. Just rip. Just go.
Season's over?
Season's over. Season's over, and maybe the whole thing is over. If he plays 1 out of 3 playoff games to start and you're down 3-0.
Rebuild.
Yeah.
Rebuild time.
Time to flush it and start anew. We'll get to Pena and anyone else at 713-780-3776. That's the number to get in with us. Talk Rockets, talk draft. We'll get to other things beyond the Texans, certainly, but it'll be Texan-centric as far as the draft sound. And also, Michael Carroll joins us at 11:30. He has seen Michael, the Michael Jackson biopic. He has some thoughts. It seems like they're in line with most people who saw it, so we'll get to that right around 11:30. That's an hour or two. We will be back.
This is ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So Big Sarge and DJ Bienname were on this station from 12-3 out at Nick's place. Big Sarge, who is covering all the teams in this city, got a chance to get a question into Keelan Rutledge after the Texans made the pick. And one of the questions that Nick Caserio didn't address, really, was where's he going to play? And that question was posed to Rutledge, and here is his response about his versatility.
Yes, sir. I'm comfortable at all three, honestly. Obviously, you're most comfortable at right guard because that's what I've played. Kind of as a freshman, started there and just stuck there through all the years. But right side to left side, obviously, is adjustment when you do that, but it's just reps. And then center, man, I'm so comfortable with it because Coach Key always told me, like, hey, you're going to have to play all three at the next level. You never know where they're going to put you at. So I was kind of the emergency guy senior year, and then obviously going to Senior Bowl, taking snaps there, taking reps there, 100% confident that I can do that, point the mic, have everybody on the same page. It's just reps. It's just reps. The more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. So that's all I'm trying to do. I can play all three.
And after –
There it is. He's very confident. You could hear that he's capable, but he did tell you he was a guard at Georgia Tech. He got tried out at center at the Senior Bowl because people wanted to see it. 6'4", 330. That's a big center. He's a big man, and if he's at center, I would imagine an outlier for that spot to be that big to play center. It's usually not how that goes, but cool. If they have a giant center along with Ingram and Teller and Smith at right tackle, Nursery at left tackle, then you like it. Now we just got to see how effective they are. So they have picks today. I believe three, one in the second round, two in the third, or is it two in the second round? I have to look it up because they did make a couple trades.
Yeah,
they made a trade yesterday.
They traded, I think they traded a third to move up, right?
But they got stuff back.
Yeah, but they got it was like a late round pick swap.
Yeah.
But it was basically a first and a third too.
So as it stands now, if you look at the Texans, just to make sure, Painter, we're going to get to you here. They have, after the Rutledge pick, they have 2 seconds and a third. So their first second's a sixth pick in the second round. So early in tonight's draft. So they'll get a couple picks in today, and then I'll have three more on Sunday. So Texans have a shot. And the question, as I was going to say, a shot to add to their roster as far as players who can contribute this upcoming season. But I wonder if they will have drafted a starter in the first four picks of their draft. Rutledge has a chance. It seems like best at center if he can do that. If they draft a third corner, that's a guy that at that point would be depth to your top two. Maybe you say the third guy in a three wide receiver set, but Jalen Petrie is staying on the field. Maybe a defensive tackle would be a spot if they make a pick there where they could find a starter.
I'll be honest. I thought when they traded up, I was thinking it was for McDonald, the Ohio State D tackle. Cause kind of thought he would already be gone by the 20s. And I thought that's what they're, hitting the gas to make sure that he doesn't get sniped before him. But they end up going with Rutledge, I think, to jump ahead of the Niners. That's at least what the thought was, because the Niners then traded out. But that I think D-tackle is probably the only guy. And, like, you know, is he a starter versus situational guy? But like, how many snaps is he playing in, you know, in relation to the starter? It's like, he probably will play about the same amount if it is like some big investment at 38 into a defensive tackle. But I don't know if they would draft like a starter. Like, I don't know where, like,
maybe
who would it be? Like,
if Jacob Rodriguez is still available,
hmm?
If Jacob Rodriguez is still available by the time they pick, if they were to make that selection, that could be a starter, taking Toto's job. Certainly a plan for 2027 as well, with all those linebackers being free agents, except for EJ Speed. EJ Speed has a 2-year deal.
And Rutledge also, to me, Rutledge seems like a 2027 pick as well. Like, more of a 27 pick than a 26 pick.
Wow. We, as a team who believes they can win a Super Bowl, and certainly a fan base who thinks they can.
Yeah.
There's some, I mean, it's not Ty Simpson level of deferring to next, deferring to next season as for your first round pick. It was interesting to draft a guy who may not have a spot in year one.
Yeah.
When you feel like this team can go win a Super Bowl. They just need a couple more things.
It's not like Wyatt Teller's like so good that it's inconceivable that he could, know.
But you would think, because of the money and the experience.
Oh, the plan is that he starts.
Yeah, there is an advantage there. It would have to be very, very clear.
Yeah. That, it'd be Erstree bidding out Cam Robinson.
Yeah. And I don't know that Wyatt Teller is of the Cam Robinsons.
Yeah.
God, this guy ain't great. And Cam Robinson got hurt. Woof, yeah. And Cam Robinson got hurt, too. That didn't help either.
Yeah.
Let's get to Pena. He wants to talk some Rockets. And after we hear from Pena, we'll hear from Zach Lowe, because not very complimentary of the Rockets head coach. What's up, Pena?
Hey, I'm pretty much going to be the same as Zach Lowe. So word on these streets is that Ime Udoka didn't come to Houston to win. He came for the hoos. Thank you.
That
great
is
weekend.
Not the word on the street. As soon as I heard word on the street, I knew it wasn't going to be great.
Yeah.
I did not know he would invoke Goodfellas with hoos, but I knew it wasn't going to be good. Because Pena called it, not to this show, but he said that the Cowboys would draft these nuts with their pick. So he has been on this tip for a bit this week, and this is just the cherry on top, if you want to call it that.
Did Lance, like other media members, maybe just go, yeah, that'd be a great pick?
It wasn't Aaron Wilson levels of Dixon, and yeah, it wasn't that. We caught it. We knew what he was up to, and he didn't fool us.
Like, I didn't write up these nuts.
Yes. Hey. Did that guy play it at the D2 level?
Yeah,
who's he?
Yeah.
Who's he?
Yeah, he went to Merrimack.
Right? Yeah. John Carroll. Then he would be a Texans pick.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear, while that was not a constructive call, let's hear from an actual professional on Ime Udoka. Here's Zach Lowe on why Ime must play Reed Sheppard.
A lot of it just comes down to, if Reed Sheppard's going to play 11 minutes, they don't have any guards who can run a functional pick and roll. They don't have anybody but Durant to do it, and he had 9 turnovers. He's 37 years old or whatever he is. They don't have enough. They play a bunch of lineups with 2, even 3 guys who are complete zeros from three-point range, including Şengün, who has forgotten how to shoot threes. And so there's just, like, even if the Lakers have to send help somewhere and they're junking up the series with switching and doubling Durant every time, they don't care because they can double Durant. Behind him are Clint Capella, Josh Okogie, and Amen Thompson in a traffic jam that the Lakers can navigate. I just think I don't understand why. Why is Reed Sheppard on the team? Why did they draft him? Their only path to offense is that triangle of players, and to play it 4 minutes in a game that you didn't necessarily have to win, but no one wants to be down 2-0. It's kind of a crisis, and you couldn't score at all, and you had no offense other than, okay, someone just we'll do one thing, and then someone dribble 50 times and get to the rim. I just thought it was like unconscionably bad.
So that's Zach Lowe. If it sounds sped up, I imagine it might be. I grabbed it from Steven Adams Stats, so he might have sped it up a little bit. But either way, that's Zach Lowe on his podcast talking about Ime Udoka's failures, the Zach Lowe Show. And that has been a topic of conversation mostly for people who don't cover the team locally. We have seen others may not be as aggressive in their criticism. I know Ryan Hollins, who we played sound from earlier, it was on that same podcast where he said you couldn't evaluate Ime Udoka fairly because of the absences of Fred VanVleet and Steven Adams. And then that goes into roster construction and why Rafael Stone would have his coach so shorthanded, particularly in the backcourt. And I didn't get to all the sound. I edited it a little bit as far as Zach Lowe's comments, but he also talked about how there just isn't anything else out there as far as that backcourt. So what are you going to do if you're not playing Reed Sheppard? That has been a question and will continue to be a question if they struggle scoring the basketball. We did get confirmation yesterday from Ime that Reed will play more than he played against the Lakers in game two. So at least more than 11 minutes, he'll see the floor. Is it 13?
I was going to say.
I don't know.
What would you set the over?
I don't know. Well,
14 and a half.
It depends on how many shots he makes early. That'll determine it. So it's a live line. If Reed makes his first couple, then you're probably in for 20 to 25 minutes. If he misses, you're probably in for 12 because he may ain't a liar. He'll make sure he gets his 12 to 13. Hey, I told you. You can't say I'm a liar.
Get
me on that. So that is the question. Beyond the fact that how healthy is, I asked it, and I think it became part of our social video. How healthy is Kevin Durant? Well, he's on the injury report for being questionable, knee and ankle. He'll have to give it a go. I can't see a way how he can unless he just absolutely can't move. But that is now baked into this expectation that the Rockets win game three from some, particularly from the morning show. They both believe they're going to win. Okay, what if Austin Reeves plays and Kevin Durant is hampered as he might be because of the lower leg injuries? I don't foresee them being down 3-0, but I didn't foresee them being down 0-2.
Yeah.
Who's this series at this point, maybe we should stop thinking about conventional wisdom in regards to this series right now.
Yeah, where, you know, even in the like game one configuration of these rosters, you're still like, well, the Rockets should win this. They definitely should be down at least what,
16 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, both games they're down 15 at some point.
Yeah,
like that. You just can't be doing that. Like that level of getting outplayed is like honestly insane. If it was like down 0-2, but they're two like close games where the Rockets were leading the entire time and then trick off a lead, it's like, okay, that whatever. That's kind of in their bag.
You're blowing games. That's what we're used to. But they had
to get outplayed.
Yeah, and have to mount comebacks to get it back into games in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that's where it's just like unconscionably bad, I believe is the phrase.
I believe that's what he said, yes.
That's where it's like, I also think they win tonight just because like that's what you do if you're like a somewhat serious outfit,
yeah, if you're is not
that
complete,
you win this game.
If you're not completely broken by the first two games, like, you win game three at home.
Just win this one. But also, I don't know if they're a serious outfit.
Talked about like they're an unserious outfit.
It's been surprising to me how unserious they've
been. Despite the mentality that at least people thought of that the Rockets held, that they play hard, they're defensively orientated, they don't back down. No matter what's going on, they're going to bring a level of aggression that's going to keep them in games. That level of aggression, where you think it's absent or not, has not bullied the Lakers in any way. The Lakers are offensively limited and kind of still get what they want. As long as Marcus Smart's not turning the ball over and turning possessions for Lakers into live ball turnovers and runouts by the Rockets, they've handled the Rockets in a way that is surprising to everyone.
Yeah.
Unless you have always been this down on Ime Udoka, which
I think even if you're down on Ime Udoka, you weren't this down on Ime.
I don't know how you could have been when they win 50 plus games two seasons in a row.
Terrible coach.
If
you expected this,
if you expected a complete beatdown, technically and on the court, then you must have thought he was absolutely terrible. I don't know that anyone did think that.
Yeah.
But this Lakers series currently is exposing him as someone that may not be up to the challenge. And that's tough when the expectations for a roster is one to compete to, for at least a conference finals. Who, however, you, however the path is, and if it's you're facing the Thunder or the Spurs in the second round, okay, you're not expected to win that series,
but to compete with those,
but
guys.
At least compete to maybe pull an upset was kind of the floor when you saw the Lakers were your first round matchup. Instead, you got a real shot to allow Rui Hachimura and Marcus Smart and Luke Kennard to drill you and send you out of playoffs. That's a tough thing to go through and then have to go into the offseason questioning your entire build. That's why Game 3 is very, very important tonight.
Yeah, because like in a different scenario, the Jalen Williams injury on OKC would be, you would want the Rockets to be good enough to where that Jalen Williams injury seems meaningful to the Rockets potentially winning the, you know.
Yeah, if
winning,
you missed it, Jalen Williams is week to week.
Yes, winning in the second round where it's like, all right, like, okay. So things are playing out. Are lined up for you.
Yeah.
It's like, it does not matter in the slightest
now. Now, if they flip it and go and wind up winning this 4-2, in about a week, could we be having a different conversation? I still think
I'm not.
Maybe not.
There's been some erosion of trust.
It would depend on how the 4-2 went. If they just blew the Lakers out by 20 the next four games, then maybe the trust that Sean is talking about eroding comes back, and you think, wow, without Jalen Williams, what can this Rocket team possibly do? If there's some change of philosophy that sets them on a path to being a real challenge. But at this point, the Jalen Williams injury is like the Lakers, like, we get Luka back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We got a real shot.
Yeah, yeah. The Lakers are the ones that are like, you know, eyeball emojing that. For the Rockets, it's like, you might as well tell me that, like, I don't know, that Cade Cunningham got hurt. It's like, that does not matter.
It does not matter. We're never going to have the opportunity to take advantage of the way we're playing right now.
Whatever.
All right. We had a caller who wanted to talk draft. We're going to get to you after a break. So if you want to call back in, we will certainly do that as the draft certainly will take precedent if you decide to want to talk about it. We'll be joined by Michael Carroll at 11:30. We'll get into some more NBA because beyond the Rockets, we did have playoff games last night. And while I said CJ McCollum shouldn't rise to the level of villain for the Knicks, well, when you're down 2-1 and he hits the game winner, maybe his status as being a villain should be certified. We'll get to what happened last night in the playoffs. We'll talk more Texans in the draft when we get back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
So, Rockets, Lakers tonight. We will see if Kevin Durant and Austin Reeves play. I would think Austin Reeves will sit this game, then play game four. But you never know. Maybe we hear he's ready to go, and that's just awesome. That'd be just great.
What a spot we find ourselves in where the Lakers can be like, you know, arrogant. Don't have to really rush their guys back now. It's like, you know, we can just get them an extra 2 days if we don't play them. like that's where we are with the Lakers. Is that they can just be like,
They're the
basically
ones.
What the Rockets did in game one.
We thought the Rockets were arrogant enough, and we don't know, but we thought, hey, KD's a little banged up. We'll sit him because look who's on the other side. And then they got a smooth ass whooping in game one and decided they got to play him. It didn't matter too much. They lost again. So now the Lakers, who apparently Austin Reeves is, whatever he did to get healthy, he's at least a week ahead of schedule. So because he was injured April 2nd, their projection with the oblique was maybe 4 to 6 weeks. It's April 24th. If he plays tonight, we're talking 3 weeks. So cool. Great. He's Wolverine. That's awesome if he comes back and plays. But what else happened in the NBA last night? You had the Hawks with the big lead. They blew it. They're down by three. And CJ McCollum makes a couple of big plays. And Jonathan Kuminga, of all people, makes a big defensive play. and they take out the Knicks. The Knicks have come back from large deficits quite a bit over the last two postseasons. Boston, the Boston games, particularly the first two, the ones that stick out. So they are used to being down, and they were in a position to win again after being down. Jalen Brunson was big late to give them that lead, but he had a shot to win it. He couldn't get off a shot, then threw the ball away. So the Hawks, with Soulja Boy in attendance and performing, as you might imagine, he did crank that.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way you can lose with Soulja Boy in the house.
I don't know that that's the case. But it does help that the Knicks, who traded 5 first-round picks for a guy, got 0 points from him. The Mikal Bridges thing, that's tough. Like, you've got Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby,
yeah,
and you allow Miles McBride to guard CJ McCollum on the last couple possessions. What are those wings for if not to shut down the guy who's cooking on the other team? Miles McBride is taking him on?
Yeah.
I get it. You're substituting Jalen Brunson because, understandably, you don't want him on CJ McCollum.
Yeah.
But then you just throw the wings, the guys you paid and traded capital for. I know you're saving them for the Celtics. I know the thought is Bridges and Anunoby, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. You can use them against CJ McCollum, too. And they did at points in the game, but when it mattered most, it was like, hey, Miles, check him. And Miles couldn't hold him. And CJ McCollum even did the too small thing to Miles McBride. It's tough.
Yeah, like, Mikal Bridges is...
If you're not going to score...
The ideal. Yeah, especially if you're not going to score. It's like the ideal build of, like, hey, you know, maybe not as quick, but he has, I don't know, what, like an 8-inch wingspan advantage on CJ McCollum, where it's like, yeah, he just should be. It's like how Kevin Durant can still be effective on defense, where it's just like, well, he's just so lanky that he doesn't have to be as quick as the guy. He can just close the space and make it difficult, more difficult than Miles McBride can. You would like him to be playable?
Yeah, Mikal Bridges, 6'6". CJ McCollum listed at 6'3".
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, the 6'6", also the wingspan is 7 foot.
Yeah. What are we doing?
Like, what is this?
Thibodeau would never.
No.
He never would have allowed that to happen.
Yime Udoka would. Oh, he might.
Well, Miles McBride has more defensive chops, I guess, than Reed.
Yeah.
So,
no, yeah, he's more their, you know.
He's more their point of attack. Yeah, he's the replacement for Jalen Brunson. And he's more their defense. Kogi. Sure.
If I have to run it through the translator, Yime Udoka translate, that's Okogie.
It was brought up on the podcast. I've talked a lot about Iota Sumo as a guy that was available. CJ McCollum was waiting for anyone to trade for him. Wouldn't he be nice here?
Yeah.
Now, he doesn't help you on the defensive end too much, but he would help you with your inability to get anything from your backcourt if Reed's not making shots early. I don't believe that Yime benches CJ McCollum if he misses his first 3 shots.
No.
I don't think that happens. I think he
gets more than
he gets extended
minutes.
Time if he's not starting.
Yeah.
He probably would be starting anyway. So, and that's not an Yime Udoka problem, that the Rockets weren't more aggressive. But McCollum was languishing on the Wizards. They didn't want to play him. They didn't want anyone who was capable of winning any basketball games. And yet, nothing. Now, certainly some of this is hindsight, except for the fact that we knew Fred wasn't going to be available all year long. And so the focus is on the All-Star break because that's the deadline. But you could have seen the first 35 games or so and be like, you know what? Maybe you want to add here because we can't depend on Aaron Holiday from game to game because he's not a guy cemented in the rotation where Ime is going to play him. CJ McCollum would have had a spot in this rotation from the jump, and he could have been someone you're running offense through to take some of the pressure off of Kevin Durant. But that's not something they chose to attack, no. And
it
this
felt
is
like,
where we are.
It felt like Stone, like, purposefully was like, dude, play Reed Shepard. Like, play
it might
the
have
guy
been,
pick third
if
overall.
We go by how he sounded when he joined us in studio, the thought was, and he said it, Reed is important, we need him to play, and maybe this is not giving one of your coaches a toy, or in this case, a veteran, so he has to play the guy, and he may have said, I don't know if you've met me before, but you can't force me to do in this wild, wild, reckless speculation we're doing. You can't force me to play him if I don't want to.
Yeah, Rafael Stone's like, damn, should have traded Aaron Holiday, too.
no ball handlers?
Yeah, no. Do it. Play him.
I would have, look, no matter how that.
Again, that if And I think it's reasonable to think Rafael Stone thinks Reed Sheppard's
It's his guy. He drafted him.
A good player. And I also don't think it's a leap to think that Rafael Stone has a higher opinion of Reed Sheppard than Ime Udoka does. That also doesn't feel like a leap. So it doesn't feel like too reckless a speculation to be like, well, Rafael Stone probably looked at the team and said, no, you have your six-man scorer type right there.
Well, you have to know not only your personnel are, but who your coaches are.
Yeah.
You know this guy isn't, at this point, is steadfast in making Reed prove that he can be someone he can count on defensively in order for him to be able to play on the offense. And look, we've addressed it that Reed Sheppard played plenty of minutes throughout the year,
mm-hmm.
but there are times when Ime Udoka will go away from him, and there's, in some cases, a lack of belief in Reed's ability to be a two-way player. So when those moments happen, the default is you come sit by me. If you know that's part of the DNA of your coach, perhaps you give him an option that he's more willing to play because he believes in the 34-year-old veteran who has had moments in playoff battles as opposed to the 20-something who is still trying to find his way. But those conversations have been had. We are where we are. And now he's getting asked questions about, hey, you're going to play more than 11 minutes? And he's like, yeah, don't worry about
definitely.
It. He'll definitely play more.
There's not many ways that it's less.
Yeah, yes.
There's 11 ways that it's less. That's it.
Feels unlikely that he won't break the 11-minute barrier tonight. So that game's tonight, but we also had another Western Conference series go down, and it was the Nuggets without Aaron Gordon getting absolutely blasted by the Wolves in a series where Anthony Edwards isn't healthy, but Jaden McDaniels said what he said, and he wasn't afraid. He mentioned he and Chris Finch had a conversation, or maybe it was Chris Finch who said it. Yeah, we talked about it. He knows what he has to go out and do, and he did it. So he falls in line with, I say what I want, and then I back it up. That was a lot of the conversation on the Prime broadcast. I think it was Dwayne Wade and Candace Parker, and I forgot who the play-by-play man was. Was it Kevin Harlan? I think it was.
Yeah.
They loved it that a guy talked the talk and then went out there and performed. And he helped the Wolves along with Rudy Gobert's defense on Jokic. Jokic has not handled Rudy Gobert well this series,
Rudy Gobert revival,
which is a surprise
not on my bingo card.
which is a surprise for many that Rudy Gobert is handling Jokic the way he is. And the Wolves at their best can do this. The problem for them is they are so, what's a non-insulting way to say this? They're mercurial.
Uh-huh.
The Wolves are mercurial.
They don't do this for very long.
No. In fact, even in the game, there were moments where, hey, guys, could just, you know how one of your best players said, we need to attack these guys that can't play any defense? Stop settling for jumpers.
Yeah. Can you do that?
Can you keep doing that? And then they'll get back to it for a spurt, and then the lead will balloon back over 20, and then they'll forget about it, and then it'll drop to 15. That was kind of the feel in the game last night.
Yeah.
But they were never in any real danger. And Anthony Edwards had some foul trouble, and he also has the bulky leg. So that's really something to look to.
Yeah, only 24 minutes.
How long can he hold up? And they certainly didn't need much from him last night with the way McDaniels played. And also, they got some shooting from DiVincenzo. And it was an all-around great effort. And Ayo Dosunmu, another, as I mentioned, a guy the Rockets
Dosunmu's the one that's
could have had, goes for 25 and 9 last night in a bench role, playing 32 minutes. These are the missed opportunities.
To me, more than McCollum, because McCollum is a little bit more like hindsight-y, and he got traded.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Hawks fans weren't thrilled when he initially got there. Things have flipped for them, yeah.
Yeah. And the Dosunmu, and with the defense stuff, you're like, well, you know, if Ime's really about it, he doesn't play. if he really cares about defense that much, doesn't play.
Yeah, Dosunmu falls in line with
this is a guy that
the Castle stuff we talked
exactly
about. It feels like exactly the type of guy you'd want.
And he can do it. He can shoot threes.
And he shot the ball well from three in the regular season. Not so much the first three games, but he's found a way to contribute in this postseason.
Even Bones Highland. That's when I turned off the game. Bones Highland made like a 30-foot three, and I was like, all right, cool. Like, this thing's up.
Having his moment against one of his former teams. So
one of his many.
I don't think he's done with former teams, honestly, despite
he's been in the league for 4 years or whatever.
He's, what, Clippers, Nuggets,
I think,
Wolves?
I think
has he been with anyone else?
What?
It's Clippers, Nuggets, Wolves. Has he been with anyone else?
That might be the list, but it, like, again.
Yeah, he's never spent
25 years old.
Yeah, he's never spent more than two full seasons with any team in his first several years in the league. He's on his first full season with the Wolves.
The Wolves traded for Dosunmu because they're like, we can't keep playing this guy.
Like, they learned their lesson.
Dillingham's not going to work out.
Yeah, they got rid of Dillingham. I think he was their second pick of that first round that year.
Yeah.
He didn't work out. They went with Bolin Tyland, and then they go, hold on. Yeah.
We can upgrade.
We got to do something else, and they have so far. So those were the playoffs last night. Hawks win. Wolves win running away.
Yeah.
And
Raptors.
The Raptors got their win against Cleveland.
That's the type of thing that the
Rockets need to do.
Yeah. Because Raptors got outclassed. Like, there's like, or not outclassed. They didn't get smoked, but it was like just uninspiring first two games for Toronto. And then you come back home. It's like, oh, yeah, a guy wearing number 77 is going to make some threes and you're going to win by 20. Yeah. And I really don't feel that much different about this series. You know, it's just kind of like, yeah, this is just, again, if you're a somewhat serious outfit, you come out and you win the game three at home when you're down 2-0. And a lot of times you do it where it's not coming down to the last 5 minutes.
Toronto got out to a lead. Cleveland fought back in that third quarter to make it a game. But at the end of the day, they had, shout out to the Toronto Raptors. Not something we have seen a lot from the Rockets. They had a 20-point advantage in the fourth quarter. That was a close game. They only won by 22. They're only up by two going to the fourth quarter after having a lead throughout. But Cleveland stayed in it, and then they exploded 43-point fourth quarter to win it going away. So
made four threes.
Yeah, I would like less of a game going through the first three quarters, but if it winds up where the Rockets just say enough is enough and they take apart the Lakers in the fourth quarter, cool. That'd be great, too.
Toronto shot 57% from the field, 61% from three.
Feels like an unlikely thing for the Rockets to do tonight. Like, but that's what you do. In game three, everything's on the line. You're not going we're not going out like this. We need the Rockets to have one of those games.
Yeah.
Question is, are they capable of it? Speaking of being capable, you know, this show, because it was a moment in time, has mentioned the Blair Henley outing quite a bit. Well, I would advise in the future for local broadcasts to stop hosting or at least featuring the parents. Don't interview them. Don't put a mic in front of their face until there's proof that a good outing is in store for the pitcher. You want to do it with the batter, that's fine. But the pitcher is isolated, and if he does poorly, it can go real bad real quick. We're going to play some sound when we come back. I'll throw it on there, Sean, of a major league debut. And the parents are being mentioned. They've got cameras on them. And then something less than ideal happens immediately afterwards. We'll do that when we come back. Michael Carroll joins us at 11:30. So you can call in for that right around there. 713-780-3776 is the number. Of course, you can get in before that. We'll get back to the Texans. We'll play more sound from Nick Caserio on what you're getting from their first-round pick out of Georgia Tech. We'll get to that and more when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.